This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to this weekend drive edition of Daily Drive for the third week in March 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today, we're breaking down some of the biggest stories in the auto industry from the past week and looking forward to what's in store in the days ahead. In a few minutes, we'll talk about a major mining project that just got a big U.S. federal loan to supply future EV batteries.
It's a huge resource. It is estimated to be the largest known lithium deposit in the world.
But first, Jamie, how you doing?
All right, Kel, how are you?
Doing all right. Let's get into some news. So, GM's top manufacturing and software executives are leaving. We know that GM has been dealing with software issues for a while, but two big names are out. Why all at once?
Yeah, you know, that news got announced on late on a Friday, and that's often what people in the PR business call taking out the trash. And you've got bad news.
Friday surprise.
There you go. You wait until late on Friday. A lot of the reporters have gone home. The editors all want to go home. The audience has mostly gone home. And I think the thinking is by the time you get around to Monday, you know, other stuff will have happened or people will feel like it's old news. So that could have been part of why they were both announced at the same time. You know, losing Gerald Johnson, you know, he's maybe a little young for retirement, but he's been with the company for a long time, been very highly regarded. I think it's interesting. His replacement is a guy who came from Tesla and had also worked at, you know, Google and Lego. So brings some different perspective. And given the troubles they've had, you know, manufacturing battery packs and EVs, maybe he can bring some special sauce that'll help get things flowing better at GM on the EV front. Losing Mike Abbott, you know, hadn't even been there a year. Apparently some health concerns that had been dogging him for months and he just needed to move on. You know, if you're having a heart condition, that is not the job for you because it has been a lot of pressure. They had to stop the Blazer EV sales for quite a while, just got those released again. They put a stop sale on the midsize pickups right before they went on sale, again, for software issues. So those are still being worked out. You know, software is so important to how people interact with their cars these days. You can't have defective software. You can't have glitches and problems. So that's really important and a big loss for GM.
I'm saying all they need to do is collaborate with the tech company. It would lessen the blow. I'm just saying. No. Well, on more EV talk, Jamie, we reported this week that startup Fisker is closer to filing for bankruptcy. What can other automakers learn during this EV transition from Fisker? Like, Jamie, what did they do wrong and what did they do right?
Well, you know, they created a lot, what they did right. They created a lot of excitement around the brand, really aiming to be the most carbon neutral car on the planet or in the market, you know, and that was, I think, inspiring for some customers. And they had a lot of really cool tech in it, but maybe trying to do so many new things made it harder to produce. Certainly, they had a hard time, you know, getting the cars out of the factory, getting them approved for sale in the U.S., so that really slowed things down as a startup. You know, they needed to get some cash in the door. And then you look at what they're doing lately, what they've been doing, trying to sign up dealers in the U.S. and Europe. Maybe if they would have had dealers right from the start, every car that they made could have turned right into cash and they wouldn't have to go through the challenge of selling and delivering all those vehicles. You know, a lot of people's dream world, if you're an auto brand, you think, gosh, if I didn't have those dealers, we could make all the money that the dealers make. But dealers have their own talents and they just they're focused on a different part of the process. Tesla has seemed to manage Maybe with some bumps along the way, but getting their cars out, dealing with trying to get them fixed and all that. But it's a really huge undertaking, and you see it with these other startup brands. It's maybe too hard to do, and dealers can be really valuable partners, even for startups.
Is it safe to say then, like, you know, everyone wants to, or I guess, try to be Tesla when it comes to this EV transition? What I mean by that is just, you know, sell the amount that a Tesla has sold, right? But is it safe to say that Tesla's just kind of been just this outlier?
It's absolutely an outlier in almost every possible way. But yeah, everyone wants to be Tesla. They want to be a $1 trillion company, which Tesla was for a while. The size it is to be valued more highly than Toyota, but it is a one of a kind thing. And the real question, the existential question for the industry, is whether anyone other than Tesla, and I guess BYD, can really make EVs at large scale, make money on them, and replace their gas burning vehicle business. I think they can, but it's going to take some time.
Right. And speaking of Tesla, Jamie, you broke my heart this week. In your column, you said that here at Automotive News, we no longer consider Tesla a luxury brand.
True.
So what is Automotive News's criteria when it comes to luxury?
You know, price plays an important part of it, but it's not just a straight price cut, especially when you think of all the brands, including Tesla, that have quite a range to their products. But it's the price, it's the competitive set, it's who's buying them and what they're using them for. And I think in the case of Tesla, look, for several years, I had a lot of people in the industry arguing that Tesla wasn't really luxury because of their build quality, because of the really sparseness of their layouts and interior designs. But I insisted, and we did at Automotive News, we insisted that it is luxury because the prices were very high. They really competed against, the Mercedes and Lexus in the market, and that the technology, with the really advanced driver assistance systems, you don't want to get into the whole autopilot thing, but I mean, the really advanced software, right, and the driver assistance, the upgradable software, that improves itself over time. I mean, just a lot of the really cool tech, the charging network and all that, it really made it a kind of a luxury experience. But you look at 2023 and the strategy shifted. It went down market. Model Y kind of came into the year priced in the mid 60s. It came out of the year priced in the mid 40s. And that's when the price of vehicles had come up to basically the mid 40s. Model Y sells like nothing else in the world, except maybe the Toyota Corolla, which is the epitome of a mainstream vehicle. So obviously Tesla still sells luxury cars. The Model S and the Model X are high priced and super powerful. The 3 and the Y are very well regarded vehicles. It's a successful company, but at the price point they're playing at and where they're trying to go, trying to get down to a $25,000 to $30,000 vehicle that they can make by 500,000 or a million of them a year, that's not a luxury company. That's a mass market company.
That totally makes sense. Coming up, the U.S. government is backing a new lithium mining project here in Nevada with a $2.2 billion loan. Automotive News tech and innovation reporter Molly Boygon joins us to talk about it next on Weekend Drive.
We want to hear your voice on Daily Drive. What would you like us to talk about this week on our Weekend Drive episode of the show? What are some of the biggest industry trends or news stories you're thinking about?
Send us a voicemail, text, or email, and you might hear it on the next edition of Weekend Drive. Here's how you can get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, @autonews.com.
And tune into the show this weekend. You might hear your question or comment.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract, combined with AutoVision, creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision.
Welcome back to Weekend Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. The U.S. Department of Energy will give mining company Lithium Americas a $2.2 billion loan to help finance its construction of a lithium carbonate processing plant at Thacker Pass in Humboldt County, Nevada. The move comes as demand for lithium grows with automakers' push to electrify their lineups. Molly Boygan covers tech and innovation for us at Automotive News. She visited the Thacker Pass mine site and nearby communities earlier this year and is writing about the project in the pages of Automotive News. She joins me now from her home office in New York City. Molly Boygan, welcome to the Weekend Drive.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
You have a story coming in next week's issue about a really big lithium mine coming to a pretty small town area in northern Nevada. What's happening?
That's right. So the Lithium Americas Thacker Pass lithium mine is underway in northern Nevada in Humboldt County. It's currently just dirt work on the site of the processing facility that's going to be there. But in about 3 years, the company is going to start scooping up a lithium ore and refining it at the processing facility. And it's a huge project. It's gotten a lot of financial support from the means of the government and GM. And it's been pretty disruptive to this area. It's a, you know, a huge project. As you said, it's rural Nevada. The town of the city of Winnemucca, which is the largest city in Humboldt County, has a population of about 8,400 people, and they're anticipating significant population growth, about a quarter of their current population, to come and build the mine, and then later 300 to 500 people to actually work in the mine.
I mean, really huge process and huge, you know, resource for the developing U.S. auto industry. I think you wrote like enough to make 800,000 electric vehicles a year. I mean, that would be like 1% of global output and, you know, it could really go a long way for GM or whoever else.
Yes, it's a huge resource. It is estimated to be the largest known lithium deposit in the world. Thacker Pass is within the McDermott Caldera, which is estimated to contain between 20 and 40 million metric tons of lithium. So it's a huge project, definitely important to the Biden administration for the growth of the domestic battery supply chain, as you noticed, and you know, just an interesting point of tension for the local community.
Well, yeah, you talked with a lot of local residents and folks in government. It sounds like the new mine presents some challenges, but also some windfalls. What's the big takeaway?
Yes, there's sort of two sides to the story, as there often is. You know, some people are excited because the mine is expected to generate a significant amount of tax revenue through, you know, accepting deliveries and through the purchases of equipment and the, you know, the hiring of people and wages and things like that. And, you know, and then there's also the hopes that high wages at the mine will sort of trickle out to the rest of the local economy and boost other wages. People are excited for the growth of this community. And on the other hand, you do hear a lot of concern and frustration, people who feel like they basically didn't have a say in this huge change coming to their community. And also that, you know, this is not a community that is really served by electric vehicles. This is rural Nevada. To drive, you know, to get there, I flew into Reno and then drove actually 3 hours. It's usually supposed to take 2.5, but there was a snowstorm the day before. You know, this is not really the ideal electric vehicle use case. And so, you know, people are concerned about how it's going to change the character of the community. The local government has also had to work really hard to accommodate the infrastructure development that's coming to the community, you know, having to navigate the system of grants and documentation. It's been a huge undertaking.
Yeah, I'm sure folks who, you know, live in a small town like that do so because that's the type of place they want to live, not by a mine and not necessarily in a boomtown.
Right, right. I will say there's already some mining in the community. There's a gold mine that hires a lot of people, but this is of an unprecedented scale. And then also the processing facility has also been a source of concern for some people. You know, this is basically industrial processing that's happening in addition to the mining. So, you know, a bit of an unknown that people are concerned about.
There was some news this week about the funding of the operation. What tell us about that.
Yes. So this week, Lithium Americas got a $2.26 billion loan from the Department of Energy. This is around 77% of the phase one capital costs for this project. So it's a huge deal. If they did not get the loan, they would have been in big trouble. this is a significant sort of vote of confidence from the government. And it also de-risks the project significantly from an investor perspective. Lithium Americas is not quite done yet. They still have to raise they have part of the remaining costs sort of earmarked from their cash on hand. They still have to raise a little bit more money. And some of that has to be raised before the beginning of the second half of the year, before the DOE loan can be finalized. So they do have a little bit more work to do. As we know, it's not the friendliest macro environment right now, especially for critical battery materials like lithium. So, you know, a little bit of a hurdle there, but the analysts that I spoke to say that it's doable.
All right. And then also kind of on the funding or the investor side, the company building the mine and the on-site processing facility is Lithium Americas, a Canadian company. But I was really intrigued by GM's role. It's becoming an investor and a customer?
Yes, that's right. GM has made a $650 million investment in Lithium Americas, an equity investment. And in addition to that, the GM is getting exclusive rights to the first 10 years of production. So they're using this lithium, or they're planning to use this lithium for their battery materials. It's the two companies are saying that it's the largest investment by an automaker in critical battery materials. So it's, to me, a sign that GM is sticking with its bet on EVs. It believes that the market is there, and it's, you know, it's willing to really, in many ways, sort of prop up this operation in addition to the other funding sources that are coming through for Lithium Americas.
Yeah, we've seen, I know your story isn't focused on GM, but we've seen GM invest in recycling and other mineral partners, this being a big one. And it's interesting to me, it's sort of, as we know, I mean, these prices are really volatile. Lithium prices went way up, they've come crashing way down. And it seems like that way, the way this is kind of structured, if the prices go up and GM has to pay more, well, they're going to get more back as an investor. And if the prices come down, that it sort of just gets them buying in and takes some of the, it de-risks a lot of that for them.
Yes, yes, I think that's true.
So you mentioned, I mean, this is a peculiar site in a caldera, which Google tells me is the remnants of a volcano that just entirely explodes and leaves a massive crater behind.
Yes, yes. Collapsed volcano.
Collapsed volcano. So I guess the important thing about it is that the lithium is in clay, basically, instead of hard rock or liquid brine. Is that like the Goldilocks middle ground for mining and refining?
Yeah, it has its pluses and minuses. It's a very unique asset. The bulk of lithium on the global market is contained in either hard rock or brine, as you said. And clay is a softer material, so it's easier to mine from a mechanical standpoint. But unlike brine, it has to be liquefied before it can be, you know, further refined. So it's a multi-step process. It is just a combination of existing processes, but it hasn't been done at scale. Lithium Americas is really the first large clay resource that's, you know, coming to lithium refinement. And the other thing is that the grade of the lithium contained in clay is usually in the middle between brine and hard rock. So it does have some of those Goldilocks qualities. It's a resource that's really unique to this part of the United States.
But it sounds like really trade-offs, whichever type of mining and processing you have to do, there's pros and cons to either.
Yeah. It just kind of depends on what resources are available, what processing capacity is available. For hard rock, for example, a lot of the mining operations are separate from processing. A lot of the processing happens in China. So it's just about, as you're saying, weighing the trade-offs, weighing the costs and benefits for each of the means of mining and refining the product.
All right. Well, Molly Boygan, it's a great story. Keep up the good work on the tech and innovation beat.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's all for this Weekend Drive edition of Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News coordinating producer Jake Neer for his help on today's podcast. You can get the latest news on mining for EV battery materials, Tesla, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back on Monday for a conversation with Chelsea Sexton with the Department of Energy's Loan Program.
If it decarbonizes industry or our economy, or provides advanced technology, vehicles, and components, it's going to generally be in our wheelhouse in some form.
If you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.